Hello, and welcome to episode 17 of Alan Fowles Norwich City Football Club. We meet again. I nearly forgot what episode we were on.
17, sort of
coming so quickly, aren't they? Shall I give it the blurb? We look at the history between Norwich and our upcoming opponents in the Championship. We basically see where the conversation takes us, and we look at any key moments between Norwich and our upcoming opponent and look for any oddities, any player connections, any wider footballing topics we tend to explore. I think we've probably covered pretty much all aspects of the game, covered a number of theories, haven't we, a number of concepts, given our opinions on pretty much everything. We always agree, don't we? Have we disagreed on anything? Yeah, can you remember?
I don't think so. I think we've been pretty unanimous in all of our opinions, rather boringly.
A bit boring for the listeners, doesn't it? They want us fighting each other, don't they? And isn't it today, you know, with reality TV and all that, it's all about conflict, isn't it? And argument and drama.
This is it.
There's no point us just going, yeah, what do you think of this, pal? Oh, yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you agree with me, pal?
People want Roy Keane, don't they? They want Roy Keane, not Danny Murphy. But, you know, that's what we're stuck with. Well, I'm sure we'll find something we disagree about.
Yes.
You're Mario Vrancic's fan. Gary Holt was the best creative midfielder we ever had. I think we agree on that one, don't we?
Of course, yeah. I think our opinions are aligned. But that's because we're footballing connoisseurs, both of us, isn't it?
So exactly.
It's no surprise that we do agree on it. Things.
Absolutely.
And funny you should mention Roy Keane, actually. Yeah. But more on that later.
Is he here? Is he a special guest?
No, he hasn't been able to join us today. Okay. His contract with ITV wouldn't allow him to do projects like this. It's a sort of conflict of interest.
I'm not sure of three teams, though. It's either going to be Forest, Man United or Celtic. So I'm not sure which one of them is most likely.
You did this at Coventry and you've done this at Luton and now Forest. So I don't know what it is. You're either cheating
I'm playing dumb. Genuinely not.
Or you've to look into a crystal ball or something. We're back Friday night, Phil.
Indeed.
I think we've done a Friday night before, but at your place, this is now again over Zoom, isn't it?
Socially distanced to the extreme once again.
Sadly, Phil, I think we might have to see the series out on Zoom because Bristol's been placed in Tier 3 is the headline news. So that's League One equivalent in footballing terms.
Or Ipswich Town, if you will, yeah.
Yeah.
Whilst we're still Tier 2, although I haven't really looked at the figures. It is what it is, isn't it? So we're stuck here via Zoom once again.
My dreams and my hopes of us being reignited face-to-face, I think it's not going to happen now. Certainly not for this series.
That's quite my support bubble days, obviously, yeah.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of people in your bubble, isn't there, Phil? I don't think there's room for me. I'm probably quite low on the priority list, aren't I?
It's like an aero around here. There's so many bubbles, yeah.
What about the gym buddies? Are they in the bubble?
Yeah, one of them's bubbled up with me, yeah. But the rest of them say we can meet up outside if you want to go running together, which, you know, obviously I'm dead against the idea because running is hideous. So I just said I'll see them in, you know, February, sometime like that, you know.
Well, I'm hoping, Phil, that we could do a second series on our Premier League opponents next year. That would be the dream still. I mean, that would be a great opportunity. Once all this is over, we'll be able to sit out in the summer sun in Halston, supping our beers and talking about the Premier League. Wouldn't that be great?
Amazing.
And have you got the football on in the background, Phil? Did you know it's Tranmere against Brackley?
Who? Brackley?
Brackley Town in the FA Cup.
You know what? I didn't. I've actually not got it on. I've not long been in, so I come straight to my computer, did important things, crack open a beer, and I've actually not got a football on. So, yeah, sorry about that.
Oh, Phil, you're all about the Premier League, aren't you?
I'm all about the Premier League, Brighton, the Glory Boys.
If it's Brighton Burnley, you'd have that telly straight on, wouldn't
absolutely,
you?
Absolutely, yeah, the classics, yeah. Some of the classic fixtures we've got in the Premier League at the moment, which they call us a Super Sunday, yeah, yeah.
I must admit, I didn't realise it was FA Cup second round until I happened to stumble across the game on, I think it's on BBC Two.
Yeah.
But it made me think, it's one of those highlights in the footballing fans' calendar, isn't it, the second round, because you know what that means is going to happen on Monday. It'll be the third round draw. And that's always one that fans look forward to. It gives a sort of a tingle of excitement, doesn't it? Wondering who you're going to pull out of the hat. And are you going to get to visit a new ground? Are you going to get to play a big club that you haven't played for a long while?
I mean, so it must have been about 10 years ago that we played Poulton, wasn't it? As a result of that.
Yep.
The FA Cup second round, yeah, it's a great occasion. I love, in all seriousness, I do love watching the second round. It's great seeing these smaller sides. It's so much fun when they pick a Premier League side, especially when you get a Premier League tied. It sort of takes it seriously. You know, he tries to get a serious team out there. Fair play.
It's just a great thing to watch, isn't it, that third round draw? You do feel the excitement, and it's going to be extra exciting for us, Val, because it could open the door for an additional episode.
That's true.
Depending on who we get, of course.
Well, I mean, unless we get another Championship team, that's almost definitely going to do it. Although, on the other hand, knowing us, it's going to be someone like Preston away, isn't it?
So, Val, any shouts you want to do? Our listeners.
I had a little bit of
you know, we've got to keep them engaged.
This is it. So, some head of the media side on Twitter. We've had a little bit of interaction from a few people. I'd like to say hello to the Brisbane Canaries.
Always say hello to them.
Exactly. My girlfriend's actually a Queenslander, so she's obviously very close to Brisbane. And I have to describe Brisbane as Bris Vegas, apparently. So, also on the subject of cricket, my mate Graham, who's listening in New York, very dear, close friend of mine in all my life. He's been listening away and enjoying it, but he did say after the Brentford podcast, very passionately, that this is a football podcast and we shouldn't be talking about cricket. So, you know, fair enough. Yeah, sorry about that one.
At least we're not talking about hockey.
I don't actually know much about hockey, other than the fact I played it. I mean, I know roughly how it works, you know. I know that you've got a stick in your hand, he chases the ball around.
Yeah, Graham, we're leaving the hockey. I mean, if he's in New York, does he want more basketball? American football, basically.
His sport is sailing, actually. He's a sailor, and he's actually been around the world. I'm sure it's Netherlands. He went and did sort of solo sailing at World Championships.
Excellent. And are you going to do a shout-out to your mate, Ollie Burton?
Ollie Burton,
is that the other person you want to mention?
Yeah, and Hall of Famer. We hang out, have coffee and cake. It's no big deal, yeah. But my mate, Dan Issa, also left a lovely message on Facebook. He's listening. Hi, Dan. How you doing, mate? And thanks, everyone. Get involved. Get talking to us. We love hearing from you. And we'll have a chat, talk about what you're talking about, and we'll go from there. No problem.
There you go. We've proved that we do take note of people that send us messages, and we've mentioned them on the podcast, haven't we?
Multimedia savvy.
So I guess we'll move on to the episode 17 file.
Okay.
Do you know who it is?
I'm guessing Forest or Celtic. I'm narrowed it down to those two. Forest, I'm going for.
Correct. The double European Cup winners. It's not often we get to say that.
No.
On one of these podcasts, isn't it?
No, exactly. What a team they've been over the years. Like, you know, and dare we say another sleeping giant? Is that fair?
Definitely. Yeah, I mean, Forest, they won the title back in the 70s, hence why they qualified into the European Cup, and then they went and won the European Cup 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
Throughout the 1980s, I mean, when I was first started to watch football, they were consistently, year in, year out, top six side in Division One. So, you know, nowadays they would be consistently competing for the Champions League, I guess.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, a real big club with a lot of pedigree. Obviously, they synonymous with Brian Clough. Ray, I don't know if you remember much about Brian Clough. I'm sure you've heard about him.
I have, read the books.
Hard not to, isn't it?
Films. I've watched his interviews on YouTube. What a character. What a character. And I just love his arrogance, don't you? Love his arrogance and his swagger and that self-belief he installed in the team and instilled in the team, should I say. What a character. We don't get people like that anymore. It doesn't seem to be the same level of characters. Maybe for different reasons, Klopp has got that same kind of charisma, hasn't he? But like, and some of the stories you hear about him, obviously he had his demons as well, well publicised. And was it Peter Taylor as his number two, wasn't it?
He was. Yeah, that's right.
Peter Taylor.
Great partnership.
Yeah, and that was fantastic. And a real advocate of getting a player to fit the team rather than the name. And it worked so well for him. Obviously, what was that, Derby as well? We had huge success at, didn't he, as well?
I think that's the key thing, what I was thinking, in that it proves what a great manager he was, in that it obviously wasn't a fluke. To do what he did at Derby was incredible. You know, take them up from Division 2, to have them win in the league and playing, competing in the European Cup, or within a few seasons, you would almost say that's unbelievable. But to repeat that with Forest a few years later, and again, when he joined Forest, they were Division 2.
Yeah.
Probably a similar level to Norwich was at that time. And just took them on this journey all the way to a double European Cup, and to do that with two clubs, I think that probably will never be beaten. I know you get managers who may do it with two different clubs, but those two clubs these days will tend to be two big clubs. You don't really, I guess the football environment's different now, but you don't really get a manager coming in at a club in the second division or the championship and taking them, you know, up to those levels.
No.
The biggest similarity recently has obviously been what happened at Leicester. And I guess they didn't quite come up from the league below to win the title, but they almost were relegated the year before. Where does the Leicester Forest debate, there was a bit of debate, it's obviously their rival clubs, on which one of those league wins was the greatest achievement. I don't know where you stand on that, Phil.
I mean, it's very hard to know, isn't it? Because without pulling out all the old cliches, the Forest stuff was a bit before my time. I mean, the Leicester was incredible, wasn't it? But it seemed that it was more possible to kind of do that back in the day than it is now. So from that point of view, the fact that the top six is such a closed shop these days, you've got to say that that Leicester performance, considering where they were the season beforehand, obviously I know they hadn't come straight up, but they were all but relegated, weren't they? They were like five games to go. They were rock bottom.
Yeah.
Or I can't remember the rock bottom. They were very close to the bottom. And
I think they were.
I'm pretty sure the rock bottom and, you know, quite a few points adrift. And they went on this run, which was just miraculous, wasn't it? They had this form at the end of that season, which carried into the new season. You've got to say, this is going to sound like I'm diminishing Leicester here, or their achievement, and I don't mean for it to be like that, but the opposition, the other big sides, the Liverpools, well, not so much Liverpool back then, Man City, Man United, Chelsea, they all had a pretty poor season. Oh, not a poor season, they just weren't as good as they could be, could they? And I think...
Yeah.
Arsenal ended up finishing second. That's the season of Tottenham finished third in the two-horse race, wasn't it? It felt like everyone wasn't quite on it. So obviously I don't know how that compared to when Forest did it. Maybe when Forest did it, that could actually swing in their favour, to be fair.
I think you're right. I mean, the Forest championship win was before my time as well, in terms of sort of memories. It's just what I've read about and seen on TV.
Yeah.
I agree with you, I think. The football probably was more of a level playing field back then.
Yeah.
It obviously wasn't easy to win the league then, but you probably had more chance if you were not one of the bigger sides.
And also, the way teams are winning it these days, which was an exception in the Leicester season, but obviously the season before last, when Liverpool finished second to Man City, I mean, Liverpool finished second on 98 points, whatever it was, I mean, or 96 points. I mean, it's just ridiculous what you have to do to win the league now. So that has obviously made that Leicester win a bit more special, maybe, because it's such a generally competitive environment. But obviously, Forest probably did it almost... The fact that it was a bit more of a level playing field also meant there was a lot of other teams that could have won it, if that makes sense. So
exactly. Do you think Clough... I've heard this debate a few times in that, has football moved on? Could, if Clough was a manager today, could he reproduce what he did back then? Or do you think he's a manager of his era?
I mean, again, it's hard to judge, isn't it? I mean, I think in terms of what was seen of him as a person, that swagger and charisma and the way that Peter Taylor threw himself into the scouting and how good a scout he was and how that both those two members of that team knew exactly what keys they were looking for to fit which lock. It was like they had it really going on, and I can't see why that formula wouldn't have worked. Now, the question is, in this day and age, is whether you'd be afforded the time to get it sorted out. But you just need one average season now, or one average to poor season in the top flight, and you're out the door. There's no time or loyalty anymore. So from that point of view, would he get the time?
It's harder to build a team now, isn't it? Whereas Clough was a team builder. He was about signing the right players, getting them in the system, and a great man manager in terms of that.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess one area where he might struggle these days, if he was still in the game, player power has probably shifted compared to what it was back then.
Yeah.
I think in the 70s, it was a teacher-pupil type relationship, and yet you could come down on your players and rule them with an element of fear.
Definitely.
Can you do that nowadays? Players have probably got too much power. The attitude's probably changed a lot. But yeah, I don't know whether that would have been an area that he would have struggled in these days.
Yeah, I agree with all you're saying there. I think that's absolutely true. Certainly, I think Alex Ferguson talks about this towards the end of his career. Not so much in terms of player power, because obviously he was probably the one manager. He still had that fear over yeah. almost all players, and still had that unwavering ability that if you, the moment you step out of line, you're out the door. But yeah. that's unusual in this day and age. But Alex Ferguson also talks about the fact that players almost a little bit more sensitive these days as well, aren't they? You can't, that yeah. reigning of fear doesn't necessarily work like it used to. Obviously, back in the day, there's a bit more of a, I'm not saying players are tougher then, that's absolutely not what I'm saying. There's probably a bit more of a stiff upper lip culture, whereas these
yeah.
days
actually... different mentality in the dressing room, wasn't there?
Yeah, and I'm not saying it's a good thing or a bad thing, that's not the point out, but it's certainly a different culture now. So whether, from that point of view, Brian Clough's man management styles would have worked, I don't really know. He seemed like, from what I've read, he was the sort of manager who knew how to get the best out of every player. You often hear it, don't yeah. you? Some people need the arm around the shoulder. Some people need the stick. Some people need the carrot.
I'm sure Clough would have heard enough about him that, you know, if he was young and in his prime, he could do a very successful job these days. His football hasn't changed that much, has it, fundamentally? It's still a very basic game on the pitch, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Tactics, formations might have changed a bit, but, you know, I'm sure he could have done the job today. Yeah, I'd like to have seen him in the Premier League today.
Yeah.
He did actually manage in the Premier League.
Yeah, it was with Forest.
One season. Yeah, took Forest down, sadly, in his last season, but that was the first year of the Premier League. Mm-hmm. But yeah, great, great manager. Best manager that England's never had.
Agreed.
So, as is traditional, Phil, last time we played Forest, can you recall that game?
Yeah, I can. That was the
go and try really hard.
That was the Christmas Eve at home one, wasn't it? I remember both
Boxing
games,
Day.
Well, Boxing Day. Yeah, at home.
Yeah,
the famous 3-3, wasn't it?
Talk me through it.
Well, you know what? It was a fantastic comeback. 100% brilliant. A game that, in the 80th minute, when we were 3-0 down, before Vrančić deflected one in, we had no right to get anything out of that game. We were dead and buried. However, what I would say, controversially, I'm going to be controversial, that I came away from that game still feeling a bit disappointed because we actually played generally so well that game. We should have
yeah.
won that comfortably. We gave away, I think it was actually Max Aarons made a mistake for their first goal. I think Pookie missed a clearance for their second goal from a corner. And then we're just chasing the game. And then he scored a third. But actually, we had enough chances that game. We should have put that game to bed. I came out of that game feeling a little bit disappointed. I think we should have won that, even though it was a stirring comeback. Having yeah. said that, it was spectacular, wasn't it? Obviously, Vrančić's deflected strike went in, but we're still 3-1 down in the 92nd minute or something, weren't we?
That equaliser, was that sort of one of the loudest noises you've heard in Carrow Road?
Yeah, there was. That was massive. It was a massive goal. And also, we need to give a little nod to Tim Closer with that magic dummy. I mean, that centre-half dummying a through ball to let it run on to Hernandez at the top of the area. Yeah. Also, Forrest should have cleared that ball.
They got a bit of stick, didn't they? I remember when they kicked the game off
yeah.
after the second goal. I can't remember exactly what happened, but they were quite naive and they gave the ball away very quickly. And we talk about game management, don't we?
Yeah.
And they gave Norwich that opportunity to have that one last chance. And I seem to remember there was a bit of criticism around the Forest team at that moment to say, you know, when you're kicking off in the 97th minute or whenever it was,
yeah,
it's basic. Keep the ball, isn't it?
Just hold on to it. Exactly. But there was such a belief around Norwich at that time. There was such a... We'd done it a few times already that season, but obviously Millwall was the big one. There was such a belief around the team that we could... And the stadium. You could feel it from the crowds. We could feel we're going to get something out
yeah.
of it.
Does that transmit onto the pitch, do you think?
100%. Yeah, absolutely.
That belief?
I think that buzz you get in a stadium... You can kind of sense it. I was talking again about mentioning my girlfriend too much, but she's not a sports fan. But I was trying to describe to her.
Stop showing off, Phil.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing. You're trying to describe to like a non-sportsman what it's, sorry, non-sports fan, what it's like to be in a stadium when you just sense something's going to happen. That must transmit to the players. And I think the players transmit it back to the fans. I think everyone, like, you're reading body language. There's such a belief that that can happen. And when it went in, it was brilliant.
I was going to say, Phil, what comes first? Is it the noise from the stadiums inspiring the players, or is it the players inspiring the fans in the stadium?
I mean, it's got to be both, hasn't it? I mean, I think it's... That's a really good question, actually. I think it's one that's been asked many times before. They both feed off each other at the end of the day, don't they, I believe? And it's
yeah.
it's hard to know what comes first. I don't really know. But you can feel it, can't you? You can just feel it around the ground sometimes. And you just know something's going to happen. And there's that, and also, you kind of get it in penalty shootouts as well. I remember watching like Gareth Southgate stepping up and obviously Daryl Sutch stepping up and thinking, I just don't know what it is. You pick up a vibe and think, yeah, this isn't going to happen, is it?
Works the other way as well, doesn't it? Whereas you get that dreaded sense that the opposition is going to score, don't you? Whether they had a concerted amount of pressure, whether there's an ex-player involved on the pitch, you just sense that they're coming back into it, can't you? And when they do score, it's almost, well, I knew that was going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. That's 100% correct. You absolutely get that feeling that they're going to score at any moment.
And I wanted to ask you, exploring a bit more about how some clubs, and Norwich are one of those clubs, probably one of the best at getting late goals. We've seen it under the Lambert era. We saw it under the Farkas reign, both that season and also obviously this season. I can't remember the statistic this season in terms of how many points we've won with goals scored after the 80th minute, but it's quite an eye-opening statistic. It's got to be more than luck, hasn't it? So what is it? Why do we get so many late goals? Is it confidence?
I mean, I think so. I mean, I think this season it's just been a matter of quality eventually telling, I think, really. Like, obviously, Wickham was the Rancic free kick and he just felt that's going to go in. But I think it's quality, but it's more than that. It's got to be belief in it as well. You've got to believe it, haven't you? It's obviously a team full of players, which, you know, they're 2-0 down, 2-1 down, 1-1, whatever, going into the 80th minute. And they're a team which thinks, you know what, this is still ours. We've still got this. And also what's quite impressive, although also necessity, we don't tend to resort to long ball and just hoofing up the pitch. We tend to keep doing what we're doing, don't we? Keep passing it around. But I think it's belief. Fitness must come into it. Wondering if our fitness levels and therefore the amount we're training is linked to our injury problems as well.
I don't know if we're any fitter than any other side in the Championship. I can't see why we would be.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree with you, actually. Professional athletes training every day, you'd have thought they should be fit. Having said that, at the end of lockdown in the Premier League, we didn't look as fit as other teams. And I think ultimately it's what it comes down to. I think it's weight of quality and belief.
Yeah. Moving on, this was far, far less dramatic, but I would say a lot bigger result. It was our 2-1 win earlier at the City Ground. Three aspects here, Phil, I'm going to give you. Obviously, going to play Nottingham Forest away is always a tough away trip. Firstly, we came back from a goal down, which I think is always key.
Yep.
And there's another statistic going around that it's surprising how often the team that scores first goes on to win a game.
Yeah, it's big.
And it's surprising how common that is.
Yeah.
So to come back from a goal down and to win the game was big. It came after the Stoke setback. So we talked about how Stoke beat us 1-0 the week before. And again, in the Championship, it's so relentless. If you lose two on the trot, it's amazing how that can hit confidence. And it's all about getting into these runs, isn't it? And a losing run is as easy to get into as a winning run. And it was also, I think, our first away win against one of the sides that we're expecting to be up there challenging at the top. I did have a look at our fixtures before then, and okay, we got a few wins, but most of those were either at home or against sides that we'd probably expect to win against. Mm-hmm. And the final point I was going to make was, it was the game where Todd Cantwell really came of age, wasn't it? Almost, he hit the footballing radar outside of the boundaries of Norfolk that day, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, you're quite right on all those points. It was and a Tim Closer double, wasn't it? Two corners.
It was.
Yeah, I remember Twitter really lighting up with Todd Cantwell. Forest fans were raving about him. I remember listening to the game on the way to Beccles, was on the way to for a musical. I was playing in my band, you know, doing my gigs.
I thought you were going to be on holiday.
No, that wasn't a holiday. But yeah, because obviously the Stoke the weekend before that, as Tim Closer scored three goals in two games, although only two of them in the right end, weren't they? So that was a big deal. We played really well from all accounts. It sounded good on the radio. Radio Norfolk always does that, though. But it did sound good. And I remember Forrest saying we were a seriously good side. And I remember thinking, that's actually a hell of a win. And it was we're just starting to believe, weren't we? There's just a hint of belief appearing there, wasn't there?
I've pinpointed that particular game or that particular win as probably the turning point in that season where it was the first result. And because of those factors that I've, you know, just mentioned there, I thought that we could be a genuine chance for promotion that season, or we'd got a proper special side there.
Yeah, agreed.
I think beforehand, things were promising, but that was a very definitive win. So I'm going to go back in time, back to the Clough days, Val. So we had a manager who was very charismatic, certainly had a lot of the traits that Clough had in John Bond. And I think we talked about him in the Bournemouth episode. Was really the manager, and it's, I appreciate it's before your time, but he was the one manager that established us in Division One. Now, his head-to-head record with Cluffy was actually excellent, considering how good Forest were. During that period of when Forest were one of the top teams in the country, we had just 2 defeats in 7.
Wow.
Including, we drew twice in the season that they won the title, and we drew 1-1 in May 1979. A month later, they went on to lift the European Cup.
Yeah.
So that's the sort of company we were keeping back then, Phil.
Yeah.
You know, we were getting points against the soon-to-be European champions. You know, those are the days, weren't they?
Well, they were. Not happened for a while now, has it? But no, I mean, that's it. We were really rubbing shoulders with the big boys, and Forest were one of them back then.
I was going to mention that 1-1 draw in May 1979. That was our 23rd draw of the season.
That's, yeah.
Which is still a top-flight record.
Is it?
That's a lot of draws,
isn't
it?
It is a lot of draws. 23 draws. Not enough to keep you up, though, is it? 23 points. But was that 2 points for a win back then?
It was, because there was only 2 points for a win in those days.
Yeah.
And 1 point for a draw. So that was enough to keep us up.
So basically,
probably
we had a reason why they went 3 points for a win.
These days. Well, they probably did that on the basis of our performance that season,
We've
didn't
ruined
they?
It for everyone. They were like, if you're going to get Norwich just drawing every game, let's just not having that anymore. 3 points for a win.
Yeah, obviously, it was interesting drawing that comparison between John Bond and Brian Clough. And I thought it was quite a nice thing to mention, and it highlights how good we were back in the 70s.
Yeah.
And it'd be nice to get back to that level. And moving on, I was going to talk about a couple of FA Cup games that have almost been forgotten about. So our first ever game against Forest was in the 1914-1915 FA Cup. We were a Southern League side at this time. I believe they were in Division 2.
Okay.
And we beat them 4-1 away, which was obviously an incredible result.
Absolutely.
But it almost got forgotten because, you know, the country was in the First World War at that point.
Yeah.
And obviously games got postponed and things got cancelled. Thoughts understandably turned elsewhere. And then we talked about the 59ers because we played Luton in the semi-final that year. Do you know who Luton went on to play in the final?
I'm going to go for Nottingham Forest.
Oh, well done, Phil. You're getting too good for these questions.
I'm on it.
To make them harder.
I'm actually on it tonight.
You're on it on the questions or on the beers?
Both, you know. It's Friday night, isn't it? Party time and lockdown.
I know. I mean, going off on a tangent here, but do you remember the old Friday nights up at Tombland?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Maybe a bit of Brannigans.
Brannigans.
Then Riverside.
Loving it, yeah. And every time, you know, go, right, we're not going to end up in Brannigans tonight. Then every time, 4 hours later, we're in Brannigans again, thinking, oh my God, that's great.
What's happened to us, Val? And now we're looking at each other on a laptop.
Yeah.
Talking Norwich and Forest.
And if we leave the house, we get arrested. It's great, isn't it?
Sadly, if it wasn't for the Luton defeat, we could have, Forest would have been our opponents in the cup final in 1959, which would have been our biggest game, probably.
Oh, without a doubt.
For us to talk about.
Yeah.
And Forest beat Luton that year, so they went on to lift the trophy. So we talk about 1959 being iconic for Norwich in the FA Cup. It was even bigger for Forest and their fans. Sticking to the old days, Phil, you might like this one, though. 1938-39 in Division 2.
Yeah.
We had one of those classic Survival Sundays.
Oh, really?
Although it would be a Survival Saturday, actually, back then.
Cool.
You like a Survival Sunday, do you?
I do if we stay up.
We've already had one recently, and that was disastrous, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Forest came to Carrow Road in an unusual scenario. So we needed a four-goal difference swing to stay up.
Right.
If we beat them 4-0... they would have gone down instead of us.
Right, okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
So the cards were heavily stacked in their favour, but it was basically either us or them would go down.
Yeah.
We won the game. Of course we won the game, but we only won it 1-0.
Okay.
So the swing wasn't enough.
Yeah.
So we went down and they survived. I was going to ask you, how would you have approached that game, firstly as a manager and then as a fan? So if we win 4-0, we stay up, but you don't want to go all out early doors and concede, do you?
How do you approach the game?
4-0's it's an interesting one, isn't it?
There's a carrot there, isn't there?
Because it's doable, yeah, exactly.
There's a carrot at the end of the stick on that one. Yeah.
But it's quite a big stick, isn't it?
It is. It's just one of those things. It's like, conceivably, it could happen. It's one of those things that, if you were playing Champ Manager, Norwich versus Forest, if you got to the end of the game and kept crashing the game, at one point you would win by a 4-goal margin, wouldn't you? So that,
yeah,
it is possible for that to happen. How do you approach it? As a manager and a fan of two different things, as a fan, you expect all-out attack, five up front, just go for it, don't you? But as you say, the problem is you can see one goal, okay, five goals, we need to score now, another goal, well, in serious trouble, aren't you? So as a manager, I suppose you have to go out, you have to be positive, don't you? Told lads go for it. You've got to try and keep it a little bit tight, though, at the back, haven't you? You can't concede a goal.
Yeah.
And you've just got to hope a lot of things go right, which clearly they didn't.
You've got to split the game into time periods, haven't you? So you've got to say, first 20 minutes, if we score, that's brilliant. But if it's 0-0, that's fine.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You need one by half time, don't you? I don't know when our goal came. So we won 1-0. I don't know if that was in the first minute, which would have got everyone absolutely
excited.
Buzzing.
Or a 98th minute where kind of like, well,
or, yeah,
it doesn't really matter. Does it?
Very difficult one to get that balance. But you could see even 1-0 at half-time, the hope's there, isn't it? 2-0 at half-time, the mentality then swings. And you can imagine if you reverse the roles and we were in Forest position, if you're going in 2-0 down at half-time, that's tough, isn't it? It's tough to shut up shop, isn't it?
The thing is that goals change games, don't they? I know it's a cliche, but it's also an accurate cliche. Well, not a similar situation. Obviously, against Stoke this week, obviously, spoilers for who's not seen the Stoke game yet, but you're a bit out of date. But obviously, we won 3-2, but obviously, going off 3-0. 3-0,
we don't know where we are, do we, in terms of
no, exactly.
What games are on now at the point of this release?
Yeah, exactly.
Because, to be clear, we're recording this a few days after the Stoke game, so that's our latest reference point.
But we had the thing, didn't we? So we're 3-0 up and we're cruising it. And the game, we were brilliant that game for 60 minutes. Buendia obviously walks and say, so a little bit, you know, that's okay, 3-0, it's not a problem. Then they can see, we can see the goal straight away. And all of a sudden, you're thinking, well, you know, okay, it's fine, 3-1, but, you know, it's a different game all of a sudden, isn't it? Next thing, that's 3-2. In the space of 5 minutes, we've gone from 3-0 up and cruising to all of a sudden it's 3-2. It's amazing how quickly a confidence can be rattled. I would have said in Forest's position, conceding one goal, if it wasn't too early, probably wouldn't have worried him too much. If Norwich could have nicked a second goal with more than 15 minutes on the clock, then all sorts of things start happening mentally, don't they?
The psychology of football is fascinating, isn't it?
100%. And all it takes is that one goal, slightly dodgy refereeing decision, slightly mistimed tackle, someone's walking for it, and, you know, or an injury to a goalkeeper, something like that. Again, we had that this week, you know, and it's a different game. So it's all about, it's a cliche, goals change games, but they do psychologically, absolutely. You know, from Forest's point of view, if they're 1-0 down with 10 minutes to go, it's fine. If they're 2-0 down with 10 minutes to go, thinking, well, this is a bit dodgy, Norwich score a third goal and all sorts of pandemonium breaks out. I think you're right. I think you have to approach it one goal at a time. Obviously, we didn't do enough that time.
In a way, I guess it's probably better we only won 1-0 than 3-0. That would have been gutting, wouldn't it?
Four,
one goal short.
4-1.
Forest were at it again. I didn't make a note of what year this was, but it was between us and them to go up from Division 3 South.
Okay.
We've got two draws in the head-to-heads with Forest, but they just pipped us for the title that year. We finished runners-up. And obviously, in those days, we've talked about it before.
Yeah.
It's very, very harsh, but only the title winners went up.
Yeah.
Two scenarios, two different seasons where they've just pipped us at the post there.
Frustrating.
You talked about him earlier, Phil. Your sixth sense, Roy Keane. You've got to love Roy Keane, haven't you, as a player and a pundit.
What a player. I mean, he's one of those players, but everyone talks about the greatest ever Premier League footballers, midfielders, and Frank Lampard gets chucked around, and Steven Gerrard gets chucked around, and, you know, David Silva, all those players get mentioned, but Roy Keane's rarely mentioned.
Gary Holt gets chucked around.
Gary Holt gets chucked around, rightfully.
Chucked around, isn't he?
Patrick Vieira gets mentioned, but Roy Keane doesn't get mentioned as much, but he was a fantastic player, wasn't he?
Yeah,
he's known for his hard tackling and his no-nonsense approach to the game, but he was a real passer as well, a genuinely good passer of the football, wasn't he? he's just an absolute winner, isn't he, Roy Keane? He's just an unapologetic winner. And anything less than winning is just unacceptable.
Now, you mentioned he was quite good at scoring. And that's a good point, because I don't know if you know this, but when he first broke through into the Forest side back in sort of 1990-91, he was actually an attacking midfielder. I think that was his position.
Okay.
So he was not quite the number 10, but someone who would attack from midfield, make those deep runs into the box, and had quite a good knack for finding the back of the net. I remember I watched a very young Roy Keane, possibly in his debut season at Forest, in the 1991 FA Cup quarter final.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Again, it was a massive occasion at Carrow Road, 9th of March 1991. We had knocked the holders, Manchester United, out that season. Flecky had scored in every round. We were going well. We were doing all right in the league, nothing special, but we were on a proper good cup run. And Forrest came to our place and I stood on the terraces in the Barclay End. Yeah, it was one of those games where I think we were probably the better side, but Roy Keane got the winning goal. It was a good goal as well. It burst through from midfield, cracking shot into the bottom corner quite late in the game, and they won 1-0. I remember at that point, or that time, being really impressed with him. He was a sort of a kid who was just coming in through in the game, and he did stand out in that particular game. Obviously, Forrest went on to Wembley that year. It was the Gazza final. Do you remember that one?
Do you remember that? Is that when he broke his leg in the game?
He injured himself badly, yeah.
Yeah.
Spurs went on to win the cup that year. Forrest also had a good record against us in the league that season. So check this out for a couple of results. They beat us 5-0 at the City Ground, and then they beat us 6-2 at Carrow Road.
Blimey, okay.
So, yeah, they got a 11-2 aggregate over us in the two league games.
Okay.
And Roy Keane, this proves my point actually about the type of play he was then. He scored two of those goals in the 6-2 win in the league. They played us three times that season, and Roy Keane scored three goals in total. And I guess like all players, he adapted his game as he progressed through his career, became more of a traditional midfielder.
Brilliant. Yeah, brilliant player. A little bit like, obviously, Maradona's passed away this week. And, you know, he's obviously remembered for the hand of God goal. But in that same game against England, he scored probably the best ever World Cup goal.
I'd say so, yeah.
And so I think Roy Keane's possibly suffered a similar fate in that he's remembered maybe more for his dark arts of the game.
We had quite a significant meeting with Forrest in early 92, so that first ever Premier League season that we remember so fondly. 31st of August 1992, it was Sky's first ever visit to Carrow Road.
Right, okay.
And it was our first taste of Monday night football.
Oh, I think that's
all the razzmatazz that came with Sky and this new Premier League package.
It's a free kick, perchance.
There was a free kick. Do you know who scored it?
Was it Mr. Ian Crook?
We won 3-1.
Yeah.
Made a note here, game worthy of the new most exciting league in the world. It maintained a superb start to the season. It was our fourth win in the opening six games.
Yeah.
And our first experience of the Sky cameras arriving to Carrow Road and all that brought with it. We've talked about the pros and cons of Sky, and we've talked about the impact of TV on football when we did the Millwall episode. Moving on to a couple other high-profile players that are linked to both clubs, and we talked about these again in previous pods. Begin to find this out, Fowl, that we're running out of material as we go along because we've covered so many things.
Yeah.
One of the biggest signings between Norwich and Forest was obviously Justin Fashanu back in the summer of 1981.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. We talked a lot about him in the Stoke episode and what a fantastic player he was.
Yes, indeed, yeah.
And he was far too good to go down with us that season.
Agreed.
He moved to Forest. He became only the fourth player in the world to command the magical 1 million fee in those days.
Okay.
But obviously, as we know, it never worked out for him at Forest for whatever reason, and it was the start of a very sad decline for Fashanu.
He got on brilliantly with Cluffy, actually, did he? I don't think. Or he met a bit of beef with Cluffy?
He did, yeah. I think they were just two completely opposite personalities, completely different ends of the spectrum. we talked about what a great man manager he was. He was, Fashion is probably the one player that he failed on in terms of knowing how to manage him and get the best out of him. Talking of Fashion, I'm sure I read something. They're thinking about naming a road after him, I presume near Carra Road. Have you heard anything about that?
Not specifically. Obviously, there's been a lot of talk about statues and things this year. And obviously, we're talking about Justin Fashion. I haven't heard about the road naming, but I think that would be quite a nice touch, actually. I think it is part of our history and footballing history and should be acknowledged. So,
would you like to have that on your address? Number 5, Fashion Way?
I would, as long as they made it obvious it was Justin Fashion and not John Fashion. That's the only, that'd be my only requirement.
Yeah, well, they can't even put the J in, can they? So they'd have to, it'd have to be the full.
Yeah.
Justin, number 5, Justin Fashion.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah.
So I look forward to, yeah, seeing that on your address one day.
Well, look forward to it.
I was going to do a quick mention, Martin O'Neill, obviously another big name that's connected with both clubs. So O'Neill won, he was part of their European Cup winning side.
Yes.
At Forest, very experienced midfielder, signed for us, obviously, in 81-82. And we've talked about O'Neill. We covered him in the Wickham episode, which made a lot of sense in terms of his contribution to the promotion that season. And then, obviously, we talked about his little stint, very short tenure as manager in 1996.
Yeah.
But I couldn't, even though we talked about Fashion and O'Neill in previous pods, I couldn't really do a Forest episode without just mentioning those two. So obviously a couple of very big connections with both clubs. Final thoughts, Val? I got 2 down here, but have you got any final thoughts with games against Forest? I was thinking of a particular goal from when you're Norwich City heroes.
So that was the day where we had a bit of a debate about what was the best goal. I mean, that was, what, we won at 6-1, didn't we? Or 5-1. And I think it was, he scored for them, as we needed signed, scored for them, wasn't it? From Villa. We're trying to sign him for 50 million. Villa got him.
McCormick.
Yeah, I think Ross McCormick. So we were brilliant that day. And it was we were having a goal of the season competition all by ourselves, weren't we? People are asking about what was the better goal, at Wes Houlihan or Johnny Howson. I mean, for me, it was Johnny Howson by a country mile. I mean, a Wes Houlihan strike was great. Don't get me wrong. That's a brilliant goal. And normally would win.
I can't remember the West goal.
That was from about 35 yards out on the half or on the volley and sort of smashed it.
Right.
It was almost like a topspin lob over the goalkeeper, which the goalkeeper was slightly off his line and was caught out by it. And I think got quite badly injured trying to save it. But that volley from Johnny Howson is the best goal I've seen at Carrow Road by a Norwich player.
You were there. You went to that game, did you? So you saw it in the flesh?
Yeah, I was there. I was behind it. I was admiring it. And what a strike that was. I've never seen a strike that pure. That's a fantastic shout. And what a goal.
Yeah.
And what a game that was, yeah.
Were you trying to replicate that in the garden back home after that game?
Garden, FIFA, you know, you name it, I was trying to do it and failing miserably. No, that's just incredible. What a goal that was.
You like that one?
Love it.
One other final thought I'd got, a very pivotal, this is a not so happy a final thought, actually. This is a rather sad occasion. In 1994, Brian Gunn got a serious injury.
Mm-hmm.
And we lost 1-0 at Nottingham Forest. And that was the start of an awful collapse that ended up with us being relegated. I think it was just before the turn of the year. So before that Forest game, we'd only lost 5 and 20. And then after that Forest game, we lost 12 and 21.
Yeah.
So it was we talk about pivotal games often in these podcasts. And that obviously shows what an impact that defeat had at the City Ground and how our season turned.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention, Fal, actually, you know, going back to, we were talking about the 1938-39 season, you know, we were talking about that final day shootout between us and Forest where we had to turn around a 4-0 goal difference swing.
Yep.
And we obviously lost out. I forgot to mention, that was the first time Canary fans had ever suffered a relegation.
Was it really? Oh, wow. We've got used to it since then.
I know, it's quite strange because that would have been, you know, a good 30 years after the club was founded and playing at a professional level.
Yeah.
So that's quite a long time, isn't it?
It's an incredible amount of time.
I mean, I guess the only caveat to that stat is we had to get promoted in order to suffer a relegation, because we were, before then, we were in the bottom league anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can't get relegated.
No, that's true. That's a fair point. Yeah, wow, that's quite something. Obviously something we've grown a bit more accustomed to, has been relegated.
Yes.
I mean, been relegated, you know, about 12 times this decade, which is, you know, somehow mathematically impossible, but we've managed it.
But like I say, Fal, what goes down has to go up, or is it the other way around? So for every relegation, there has to be a promotion, doesn't there?
Well, technically
not, but...
Yeah.
In our case, it's tended to follow that trend, hasn't it?
And again, we've said this before, would you prefer the last 10 years we've had or the last 10 years Everton have had? You're going to pick us, aren't you? It's been brilliant, hasn't it? You know, not brilliant, but it's been exciting. It's been interesting. So fair enough. Yeah.
I love how you're very positive, Fal. I like the way you can put a positive spin on anything, even relegation.
Well, yeah. I try my best.
Go for on the score prediction, Fal. You've been doing a lot of 4 and 5 ones lately.
Yeah, not really pulling that one off. I'm going to go 2-1 Norwich. I'm pretty sure Norwich will win every game.
Even with the injuries.
Let's have a quick... I'll be home or away, or does that not matter to be decided? Injuries...
We've given up on that now. Yeah.
How far in the future I'll be doing this? Is this 3 weeks' time?
From when we're recording?
Yeah.
Yeah, but about that. So we don't know the injury scenario then, we don't know form?
Well, I think Kroll should be back by the time we play this podcast. And I think Pukki will be back, providing there's no more injuries appear. Bundir will definitely be back, providing he doesn't get injured. So I think by the time we get to Forest, we should be looking all right again. I reckon we'll win 2. I'm going to go 3-1, actually. 3-1 is my final score.
Oh, obviously there's a connection, isn't there? It's Forest are managed by Chrissy Houghton now, aren't they?
Yes, and fair play to him. But I hope we beat
him. Yes. So maybe if Houghton's beginning to work his magic at the back, maybe we're struggling with injury still.
Yeah.
I don't know whether to go for a 0-0. I might as well, Fal. I'm going to go 0-0.
I think I went 0-0 for Stoke.
Controversial.
So that's ruined everything.
I do need to tot up our scores, actually. I've got no idea where we are since Preston. So that's it, Fal. So thank you very much, as always, for your contributions.
Thank you very
much. And your insight and your expertise.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you once again, even though we are socially distanced by 200 miles instead of 2 metres. But, you know, such is the way of the world, and it's just lucky we can still do it. So
just focus on the glorious days next year when we're doing the Premier League series.
Cannot wait for that one. And hoping that on Monday we're going to get a decent FA Cup draw and we can do an FA Cup special.
That's a good point, Fal. I'd forgotten again about the draw. Yeah, that would be great, wouldn't it, if we pull someone out of the hat who we could do a special on.
It certainly would. So looking forward to that one.
Excellent. Well, okay, take care and I'll catch you soon.
Thank you ever so much.
Right, cheers, Fal.
Bye.